I'm going to get us started, and I think Cindy wins the most patriotic outfit, so you should lead the pledge.
Oh, okay.
All right, so we're all in the boardroom. We're standing for the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States
of America,
to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Our public comments are to be submitted in writing, so we don't have a live public comment period today. We have legislative updates, and we're going to start with conditional approval response to school building construction with Amanda.
Drew, before you start, can I take a roll call vote, please?
Oh, okay, sure, that would make sense.
Okay, this is Angela Adams, and I'm going to take a roll call. If you are not in the building, if you could just state the room you're in, if you have any company. Sally Griffin.
Yes.
Ann Lane.
Yes.
Kate Cassidy.
I'm here at the office, and nobody's in my office.
Cindy Shagman.
Here.
Bill Nazaro.
Here, and I'm in my office, and there's no one else here.
Helen Honoreau.
Present. I'm in my office with the door closed. There are other people in the building.
Drew Klein.
Here in the same boardroom.
Wonderful. Thank you, everybody.
Can you mute your laptop? Yeah. Just the volume.
Sure. I'm trying to figure out how to get online. Same here.
Okay. So, roll call. All good. So we'll go ahead.
Drew, this is Helen. Could we get a copy of anything that was submitted written for public comment?
There was nothing submitted, was there?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said there was. Sorry. I thought you said there was.
No, the process was to submit it in writing, but Amanda said we didn't receive any.
Okay. Thank you.
If we do, obviously we'll share it with the whole board.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
So do I attempt to get on the state website, or how do I get this? I can't get on either.
We have some technical difficulties here logging in.
I just tried to open Safari, but that's Safari.
You can't get any of those things. So hold a second while we try to get everybody up and get their computers going.
Well, just tell me what to press. You don't have none of that.
Do you guys need another connection?
I don't know. Nothing is pulling up that we should. I got it.
You did.
Safari.
Oh, you
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay, we're still getting everybody online so they can access all their documents electronically. So bear with us a second here.
Okay. It originally asked me if I wanted to use my hotspot for my iPhone, and I said yes. Okay. And
you should be able to access everything.
So then how do I, on my mail, let me get my mail.
Yeah, you just go to the mail.
Okay, is everybody on? All right, so now I think we're ready.
We're on.
You have four.
This is Amanda Phelps. I'm in the boardroom with the board members. I believe the first one is conditional approval of ED 321.
Can Amanda speak louder or get closer to one mic? I'm having trouble hearing what she's saying.
Okay, I'll speak louder. Hi.
There we go. Thank you.
All right. So the conditional approval response is required because GELCAR gave us a conditional approval at their online GELCAR meeting. The conditions were all met, and the updates are highlighted in your executive summary and in the rule proposal. There is one condition that we seek legislative authority for, and that was the 35-year cap on what's considered new construction. They are letting us adopt the rules, but they would like us to seek clarity on whether we have the authority to put a cap on what is considered new construction. So we're going to do that by, I'm going to work with Chris Bond and the AG's office and see if they can provide clarity for us. Otherwise, we might have to seek a legislative fix in an upcoming legislative session. So these are, you're going to approve the conditional approval response. I was hoping that we could try and adopt it also on the same day like we usually do. That requires me to email now this over to OLS. I told them by noon, but if we're done by noon, we can adopt at the next meeting.
So did you understand that? If we have a conditional approval response, if we approve that today, Amanda's going to email it over, and then we have to wait for them to get back to us before we can approve, adopt the rule. If they don't get back to us by the time we're done with our meeting today, we can just hold it the next meeting. All right.
I was just curious, and through reading through this, I was, you know, the few changes, but it's like all the wills became shall. What is the differentiation between those two words that was so important that they kept changing it?
In the guidance for how to write rules with the administrative rules procedure manual, they ask that we use shall instead of will.
In other words, there's no intent to change to lessen the regulations or anything like that. It's just a word.
It's just the word. And if it was changing may to shall, that would be
substantive. Yeah.
But it was just, they requested.
It's just the terminology. Any other thoughts on this rule? Discussion? How about a motion?
Go ahead. I'm in your speech, so I move that the State Board of Education approve the conditional approval response for ED321 school building construction.
Second, Cindy. So Angela will do the roll call.
Sally Griffin?
Yes.
Ann Lane?
Yes.
Kate Cassidy?
Yes.
Cindy Shagnon?
Yes.
Phil Nazzaro?
Yes.
Helen Honor?
Yes.
Drew Klein?
Stay. Okay.
Thank you.
So we have update on public hearing date for remote instruction, basic instructional standards in school year.
Yes. This is Amanda Phelps again. At the last meeting, we had a proposal, and I had said that we would have a public hearing in July. There was a delay getting the fiscal impact statement from the legislative budget assistant, so we won't be able to have the public hearing until August. There's a requirement for us to notice the hearing within 20 days of our public hearing date. I did receive the fiscal impact statement yesterday from the LBA, so it will go in the rulemaking register within the next 2 weeks, which gives us an August public hearing date. I just wanted to make that announcement that we will be holding a public hearing at the August meeting.
Okay. Can we make sure everybody gets a copy of the impact statement?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. That's just an update. Any questions?
Nope.
Any questions on what we received?
I'm sorry. What?
If we're not having a public hearing today, is it possible to still
ask
questions?
We are having a public hearing on the other schools. Is that what you're talking about?
No, I'm talking about vocational rehab folks.
Yeah, we are having a public hearing on those today
okay.
at 10 and 10:30.
Yeah. This is for the public hearing for the remote instruction rules.
It's about the legislation.
Is that Ann talking?
Yeah, that was Ann. I guess we need to speak up a little louder if we're in the room.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, please, anybody who's on phone, you can just let us know if you can't hear us, and I'll crack the whip and make everybody speak up. I tend to speak softly, so let me know, too. So we're going to hold off on adopt school building construction since we have to wait for a response to the one we just did. So that brings us to public hearings, which we're way early on. So we're going to hold off on that. So that brings us to Council for Teacher Education. Is Laura on the phone?
I am on the phone.
Hi, Laura.
Hello.
And do we have the SNHU folks on the line as well?
So, unfortunately, SNHU, Mary Ford's modem blew up yesterday, and so she's not able to access, retrieve, or send any information until her modem is replaced. She sends her apologies. However, they're requesting the redaction of the request for the substantive change, and they will revisit it in the fall once COVID life has settled some.
What are I going down to? I've been looking. It took me a while to find it.
Yeah, we're on Southern New Hampshire University Amendment.
Okay.
Item 6A. So they can't be here. And can you repeat, Laura, what they're asking?
So they are forwarding a letter redacting their request for the substantive change that was tabled. They'd like to pull it back and revisit it in the fall.
Yeah. Okay. So then we have no action to take right now.
Right. It was tabled from last month, and so.
Right. Leave it tabled.
So either tabled or just remove it completely.
So they'd rather it just be removed from the agenda entirely, and they'll come up with something.
Correct.
So from what I've read, it was that, I mean, am I wrong, that they were taking these programs out, and then there was so much saying, hey, we need them, so they're trying to put them back in.
And now they're not sure if that's what they're
right.
going to do.
Yeah.
So I'm just, you know, as I know today, or last yesterday, they announced they're only going to be online. They're not
right.
going to have any right. on campus. So many of their education programs are involved with schools. So it would be tough.
Okay. So
okay,
so I think the motion would be to remove this from the table and remove it from the agenda.
So moved.
Okay.
Second.
All right. Cindy seconds. Cindy makes the motion and seconds. So we'll need a roll call vote. Angela, are you there?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was still muted. I'm trying to. Yes. Sally Griffin?
Yes. Aye.
Ann Lane?
Yes.
Kate Cassidy?
Yes.
Cindy Shagman?
Yes.
Bill Mazzaro?
Abstain.
Helen Onero?
Yes.
Drew Klein? Thank you.
Okay. Plymouth State University. So I guess we'll go to B1 here. We'll start with the option 4 review and approval of 11 programs per case.
So this is Laura Stone King. I would just do a check first to see if Mary Eric and Brian Walker from Plymouth State have joined.
Coming online, or
I wasn't clear if they were joining online or in person.
This is Jennifer, the moderator. If either of those individuals are and did not call in as a speaker.
Mary Eric.
Hi. Sorry.
No, Mary's on the phone.
Oh, they did. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so Mary Eric is on the phone.
Hi, and Chris Ward is available also. He's going to call in, I think, at 9:30 if you need him for the CTE.
Okay. Yeah, we're running a little ahead of schedule here. So.
Oh, that's awesome. I don't mean to. I just want to let you know that he planned on being here if you have any questions for him.
Okay. So, Laura, do you want to tee this up for us, and then we can ask Mary our questions?
Sure. We'll start with the first one. This is Laura Stone King. The first one is a option four review that was completed. Sorry, hang on just a second. I'm trying to turn towards the mic. These programs last month were given a one-month extension until the end of this month. They have received the report from Kate, which is attached, or I forwarded it, I'm assuming it's attached, and they are requesting approval for 11 initial level programs as listed.
Okay, and so this is Mary Eric online, and I'm just going to
can't hear you.
Okay, thank you. So this starts with the CAPE Accreditation Action Report from April of 2020, and it's pretty long and detailed. And my first question for Mary, if you can help us understand this, so CAPE gave you the approval. So
yes,
you are accredited
through CAPE. We're accredited through CAPE.
Okay, so, you know, that's very encouraging. My question is, so when you start off in the top of Kate's action report, you immediately have areas for improvement and stipulations. Now, granted, they have accredited you, so you are good, but they flagged some areas for improvement. And the top here, we go through the EPP lacks evidence of candidate use of data to reflect on teaching effectiveness or modify instruction across the program. There's no evidence that candidates model and apply technology as they design, implement, and assess learning experiences. No plan to ensure clinical experiences are varied and of sufficient depth and breadth to ensure candidates demonstrate their developing effectiveness and impact on P12 students.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
The report, the final report, that's an April report. Then we had another meeting, provided them with additional information, and there is a two-page report, and that has the three AFIs that we have, areas for improvement. So, and if Chris is here, he can explain this. He's here. So the report you have was the report prior to our final meeting with CAPE and our final time to present evidence. The final decision is an additional attachment that you have. So I can't speak to those because many of those have been removed. So the AFIs, and I'll pull them up on my end, we do have AFIs, absolutely. And Chris, while I pull it up so that I can speak to the AFIs, could you explain how AFIs work in CAPE?
Can we also have that pointed out to us where in the packet the additional report is?
It's the decision letter.
So there's so item in your packet, I believe that is item 6B2. So there's a letter from May 15th, 2020 to Dr. Birx. And that
May 15th?
Yep.
Yep.
6B2. 6B2. I believe that is what she's referring to.
And I appreciate it, only because that's the final decision, and I absolutely will speak to the AFIs. But, Chris, did you want to explain how AFIs work at CAPE?
Can we hold for a second? I'm still not finding what you're talking about.
It's, it's 6B1, and it's page 7 of the PDF.
Yeah. Okay. So on 6, so that there's a letter attached. 6B1. So if you scroll down to page, I think it's page 7.
Okay. As you know, I print everything, so I'm going to go on to my computer and look to see what you're talking about, because I don't see what you're talking about.
If you open or if you printed it, 6B1,
okay,
it starts with our summary, and then the summary of the timeline as possible motion.
Yep.
And you go down, you keep scrolling down, and you will get to CAPE letterhead here, information for EPPs, credit accreditation with sort of a summary of how it works. And then right below that is a letter on CAPE letterhead from May 15th.
Yep. Okay, I have it.
Accreditation status has been granted.
But it says there are enclosures through.
Right.
Where are the enclosures?
But behind that is what you were referring to, isn't it? Drew, right behind that accreditation action report?
Correct. So right below that letter from May is the April accreditation action report. That's what's attached.
And that's what you were just talking about, right?
Correct. And that has the areas for improvement.
Right.
But that's not the final decision. The decision letter has what the final AFIs are. There was a meeting after that in April where you go to CAPE and you respond to any issues in your reports. It's a panel, and we all went. So the decision letter has what the final AFIs are.
So I'm reading that, I think, the May 15th letter. Is that what you're talking about?
Correct. Thank you so much.
Okay.
That is the letter.
I'm reading it, and it's saying our two documents, the accreditation report, which is what I think Drew was just referring to, right?
That's an April report. Then you meet with CAPE in case of additional information that they didn't get from you, which we did, and we were all there. Don was there, and the state was invited if they chose to. And then the decision letter gives the final AFIs, and that's in the May document. They list the AFIs in there.
We have the May letter.
But there's nothing about AFIs in it.
But there's nothing.
I apologize. I just want to make sure that we have the same document. That's all. So I hope that's okay.
Well, so I guess our struggle here is that we have the way our packet is put together. We have the May 15th letter, and immediately below that is the April action report with the AFIs listed.
So there were changes made to the, what you should have is the decision letter that lists the AFIs.
Did this come in Angela's initial thing, or is there any way it came in? I didn't see an addendum that came in later.
The addendum had nothing to do. This is Angela.
Angela.
To do with PSU. Sorry, it had nothing to do with PSU. It was SNU, and so what I sent is originally. I think there may be a I think when the file was labeled V1B1, but when you printed it, it was V2. It was 7 B1. So that may be the problem if you're looking at a printed copy.
No, I we're all saying the same thing. You're right. It does print as 7B1, but there is a letter, the May 15th letter, and I think Dr. Eric is referring to that, and then right attached with it, There's nothing in that letter that says final AFIs. It doesn't refer to it at all. It
The letter came with the decision. This is Chris Ward.
Excuse me? Hi. This is Chris Ward from the Council for Teacher Education. Good morning.
Hi, Chris.
I can clear up some discrepancies. I'm also a accreditation counselor for CAPE, so I was at the April meeting, and I'm pretty fully aware of the communication that has been going back and forth between CAPE and PSU. Can I clear up some confusion?
Please do.
Okay. So the two documents you have, those documents are both from after the April meeting that we had where PSU was granted accreditation. So the letter, you're right, it does not contain any AFIs. The action report that you have in the packet is the final action report. It lists all the AFIs that PSU has. Now, PSU's accreditation decision in April was only for Standard 5. Any other standards were not considered because PSU had met all of those other standards back in 2018. So the only standard that was reviewed and made a decision on was Standard 5. So all the other AFIs, they are from the previous visit, which was in 2017 and voted on in 2018. So they're not from the most recent visit. Only the AFIs for Standard 5, which is one, are from the fall 2019 visit. I hope that clears things up a little bit.
Thank you, Chris. That is very helpful because as I read through these, they struck me as exactly the same AFIs that we had to look at before.
PSU didn't even have a chance to make progress on those. They weren't considered at all. So my assumption and my expectation is that Mary and PSU are making progress on Standard 1, Standard 2, those AFIs, but they weren't part of the review last year, so therefore they're just the same language that was back in 2017-18. So just wanted to clear that up. So and the idea of AFIs, as you might know, is that they're minor deficiencies that don't preclude an accreditation of the full 7 years. So they have to be addressed and updated in every annual report for CAPE, but there's no conditional approval on those, and they need to be addressed by the next full visit, which is in 2024 for PSU. So they're not a serious deficiency. Just wanted to put that out there as well.
Okay, that's very helpful, Chris. Thank you. My concern was that these were the same areas for improvement that we saw several years ago, and
Yes. They're
all outcome-based, and that was the red flag to me, is that these were areas that were based on the students demonstrating in the field that they can do the work, that they're actually prepared to be teachers,
mm-hmm.
and so to see that again was my concern, and I guess what my question
right.
for Mary is how have you guys been addressing those since they were first brought up?
Sure. So I presented this to CAPE when they came for Standard 5. We have an IRB, and we have conducted case studies, and we actually are showing impact in the field. What CAPE wants is a more systematic way. We have requested data from the New Hampshire Department of Education on our teachers that are currently teaching the field, but they said that unfortunately due to laws they cannot provide that data to us, so we are doing it through case study. CAPE does want us to try to work with the state though to get data from the credentialing database if we can, and I'm hoping that in the future that is available aggregated to all universities, because we could use that data to progress monitor impact in the field. The two case studies I sent to CAPE, which they accepted for this interim, one was a school that we're tracking where our interns are co-teaching, and the grade 3 reading levels increased by 30% over the last 3 years. I also presented that to the task force, the Legislative Task Force on Education, we have a second case study where we're following leadership. So individuals that have gotten CADs or principal licensure from our programs who now are implementing competency-based and multi-age education. And we have one school that has decreased their IEP recommendations by 45% over the last 3 years, working with our co-teaching interns. So those are the two case studies that I've tracked to date, and we're continuing to track those.
So those are,
we have a couple of questions.
Yeah, so those are the type of things that, just really quickly, that are supposed to be included in annual reports, correct?
Correct. It was submitted to CAPE. CAPE has that data. They just want more systematic data from us. So they've asked, I mean, they're asking all universities now to work with their state Board of Ed to try to get data from credentialing systems on their graduates. So as I said, I'm going to bring that to the CEP at the New Hampshire DOE and see if there's a way that maybe we can work with you all to get that data for all universities in the state. We also, of course, do surveys. We do satisfaction surveys, and we post that all publicly on our website. You can download those and see those anytime you want. So we're tracking and posting data on an annual basis. We just simply can't get that systematic data from the state agency. So that's why we're doing case studies.
Okay, Jen, you said some other folks had questions.
Hey, Drew, can I jump in? This is Steve Appleby, Division Director. Yep. The data that Mary is speaking of, we have not received a formal request for that data. I'm not sure if that's in process, Mary, or...
Yes, my Office of Institutional Effectiveness sent that in several months ago. And we were told we unfortunately could not get that data. I have all the emails. I can send them to you.
Yeah, can you please forward that to me? Because that is news to me. I'm unaware of that. Thank you.
Oh, I would love to. And, no, thank you, Stephen, for taking that on for us.
So, hold on. Helen has her hand raised.
I do. So, Laura, are you...
Helen. Go ahead.
What? Laura, are you still on the line?
Yes, hi. This is Laura.
Hi, Laura. And thank you, Chris, for clearing that up. And, you know, that might have been helpful in our review because I like... Drew, we're saying deja vu all over again, that, you know, these things were that we have been seeing for so long were up again. So I wasn't aware that we were only looking at number standard five. However, I understand that PSU is providing a report to CAPE. In the annual report that we get from PSU, are they also addressing these standards? Because while CAPE wants certain things, I think our 600s in the state of New Hampshire is looking for data and analysis of data, not just having a system for recording the data, but also analyzing it and doing something with it, you know, the whole continuous improvement idea. So is that something that's covered in the annual reports?
This is Laura. I'm actually going to ask Chris Ward to respond as the CTE chair because the annual report was created by them to help advise during times of some change here at the DOE as to what the institutions were doing. So he could best provide for you what information is requested from each of the institutions on the annual report.
Does anyone else on the phone have a hand up? Sally had a question.
I did. In the just for clarification, in the May approval letter of approval from CAPE, based on that, are there any serious discrepancies that are listed? I don't. SMA at all. But it does. Mary? Who should I miss?
I don't think so. You mean items, areas for improvement or anything like that? Yeah, no. It was just
under
three.
Yeah, under. And is this letter accreditations with stipulations? Are the stipulations and the stipulations serious deficiencies? That's my question.
Okay. Mary, did you catch that?
I'm so sorry. I'm having a hard time hearing. Could you just repeat what you'd like me to answer to?
Yeah, let me restate the question. Sally's question was, as of the May letter, were any other issues identified that were serious discrepancies?
No, we had no stipulations. We have full accreditation through 2024. And we were only being reviewed on standard 5. We went and met everything on the other standard the last time they were here. But there are three AFIs that we're working on, and we should be. Everyone should have areas for improvement. One of them is trying to get that institutional data from the state. Another AFI is that CAPE has moved to wanting valid and reliable tools in the field. We had a system of calibration, but we're going to be doing it every year now to meet that standard, which, again, is just good practice for our assessment tools. And then the third area was that they want us to continue to monitor. We have 26 programs, and so what we've done is we've made them more consistent in their experiences in the field. There is no, in the 600s, it doesn't tell you like this many hours you have to be in the field. But what PSU wants to do in working with CAPE to do this is find a way to standardize it across all programs. So we've implemented that this year as well. And we think that's going to be value added for our schools, and our PDS schools, and for our interns.
I think Cindy had a question.
I was just reading that with the information about accreditation statutes have it. And it sounds like the serious deficiency thing is more a description of what, you know, a serious deficiency would cause the probationary accreditation, more a description of, but it doesn't sound like that's what we're working towards. So it doesn't sound as if there's any serious, you know, just having that in there made me go, ooh, are there some that are not listed? But the more I kept reading it four times here, it sounds like it's just, it could be, but it's not. Am I correct, Mary?
I am so sorry. Could you just I'm having a hard time.
I said, reading about the information about accreditation statutes, it says, well, I can't say that word. Thank you. Okay, and it says we're reading about, you know, stipulations of serious deficiencies in meeting CAPE standards will be under compliance, whatever. And then the next thing is probationary accreditation. That would cause, serious deficiencies would cause probationary accreditation. But it
correct.
Sounds like that's not what the situation is here. That's just a description of the process, but you're not
correct.
Going for probationary accreditation. Is that correct?
Oh, no, no. Oh, that is correct. No, we're fully accredited. I spent the last 3 years working on this, and I'm very excited.
We just saw that serious deficiency to meet a standard, and it's more a description of the process and not a description of what you guys are going through at the moment. Okay.
No, we're off probationary accreditation now, thankfully.
Okay.
This is Chris Ward again. I think I was asked to address something in the annual report.
Yep.
Sorry, I was muted for a minute. Is it okay to do that right now?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, so Helen, your question was about whether in our annual report for the state there's any question or prompt to explain continuous improvement efforts like there is in the CAPE annual report. So we do have a question in the annual report. What improvements or revisions have you made to programming this year? Please respond to goals and priorities from last year's report. So there is a space for all institutions to address whether they're they have any conditional or full accreditation, full approval from the state is irrelevant. Everyone is describing their program improvements, continuous improvement efforts, innovation, successes, areas that they address the goals for that they want to address. So yes, there is space in the annual report for that.
Oh, thank you for that. But so in the case of PSU, are they addressing in their annual report these areas for improvement?
Well,
I know those are from CAPE.
Right. So there's no mechanism right now for them to specifically address any AFIs for CAPE in the DOE annual report. If that's something that we think we should do, then I think we have the option to do that. But not currently, there isn't a prompt to address CAPE's AFIs in the DOE annual report.
Okay, thank you. I'm just, because CAPE doesn't have another visit until 7 years, and they ask that the institution be working on it, I'm sure they're describing it in their CAPE report. It would seem to be something that the CTE would also be interested in.
I that's a good point, Helen. And, Mary and I and Brian and Laura can talk about getting the CAPE annual report, excerpts from that Mary and Brian are presenting to CAPE on an annual basis into our annual report, because you're right, they do need to address, and they have been addressing
okay.
for CAPE, all those AFIs for standards 1 and 2. So that could be something that we join together to try to do, for sure.
Yeah, if I could just pop in real quick, I think it would be useful, given that we have these AFIs that have been outstanding for a couple of years, and we're just not really clear on what the progress is for meeting those. Would it be feasible, before we even work on a formal format for incorporating that kind of stuff into our annual report, just to ask Mary if you think it would be acceptable to just ask PSU, can you give us, at the time of our next state annual report, an update on what progress you're making on those?
Absolutely, but I want to make something clear that we actually passed the other standards. We don't have the number of AFIs that may have been in that other report. So I'll make sure that when I submit my annual report to the state, I attach that with all the data that we're sending to CAPE. It's really not hard to do it all, as long as there's a mechanism, someplace that I can upload it for you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, Mary, sure. when we're creating the template for this coming year's annual report, we'll work together, Laura and I and Kelly, we can work together to put in some way to include that information.
Great, because the state already gets the state already has access to our CAPE account. So I'm thinking you're going to want me to pull out pieces, right, that are more digestible for the State Board of Ed. That's what I'm thinking,
right.
Helen.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Sure. It feels like a long time to not know what's going on. CAPE's getting reports, but we aren't necessarily. And it's just that we've seen it a number of times and don't really know what you've shared with us today. That
absolutely
took care of it.
Absolutely.
And that would just go a long way in our understanding that it has been taken care of.
Like I said, absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's a good
idea.
And
I'll work with the CTE on what's the – like I said, I don't want to give you like 30 pages. I want to pull out the important data for you. So we'll work with them to find out what that should look like, okay?
And Mary, if I can be a little clear here, data is good, but I think what would help the board is to have a specific narrative addressing each.
Oh, absolutely. Sure.
Standard 1, for standard 2, for standard 5, an explanation of, okay, Cape identified this. Here's how we've gone about addressing it, and here's the progress we've made, and here's where we still have to go.
Yes.
That would be...
Well, that's my Cape report. That's how I do it. So it's easy. It's very simple to me then. That's exactly how you write your Cape report. Okay?
Yeah, and I would just agree with Mary that I also review annual reports for Cape, so I see a lot. And yes, if there's an AFI that there's a space for every AFI, and, you know, it says, you know, if you have AFIs, you know, how are you addressing them? So, yeah, there is a narrative. I just wanted to corroborate what Mary was saying.
Okay, because that would be helpful for the board.
Drew, can I just say quickly, if anybody is listening to this tape later, AFIs are areas for improvement. We've been using AFIs terminology all
Thank
the
you.
Time, and people are like, what is that? Sorry, Ann, go ahead.
Mary, could you confirm that the May 15th letter applies? I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but does that apply to the four programs that comes up on 6B2,
EG6122?
Does that letter apply to both?
No, it does not. So our advanced programs are on a different calendar.
Those are separate. The CAPE letter is just for B1, those 11 programs.
Right.
Sure. But I want to assure you that after this, I'm putting them on the same calendar so we can look at them at one time annually. Okay?
Okay. So does anyone have any more questions for Mary or for Laura on item 6B1, this CAPE accreditation?
Are you ready for the motion?
With no other discussion or questions, we're ready for a motion.
And you want them all read? It has to be official?
I think so.
Okay. The State Board of Education moves to grant Plymouth State University approval of these 11 CAPE accredited programs through December the 31st, 2024, ED612.03 Early Childhood Education, BS level, ED612.04 Elementary Education, grades K through 8, K through 6, BS, Master's and Post-Baccalaureate, ED612.05 English Language Arts for grades 5 to 12, BA, Master's and Post-Baccalaureate, ED612.06 English for speakers of other languages, ESOL, master's program and has baccalaureate, ED612.07, general special education, master's, post-baccalaureate, and ed specialist, ED612.16, health education, BS, master's, and post-baccalaureate, ED612.18, mathematics, 712, under bachelor's, master's, and post-baccalaureate, ED612.19, Digital Learning Specialist, Master's Post-Baccalaureate, ED612.21, Physical Education, K-12 for bachelor's level, ED612.28, Social Studies for grades 5-12, Bachelor's, Master's, and Post-Baccalaureate, and ED614.06, School Psychologist for Master's and for CAG level.
Well done.
Yeah.
Ann Lane second. Roll call.
Sally Griffin.
Yes.
Ann Lane.
Yes.
Kate Cassidy.
Yes.
Cindy Shagman.
Yes.
Bill Nazaro.
Yes.
Helen Honoreau.
Yes.
Drew Klein. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. So we are on to item 2 here, science, new 5 program extension request. Laura, I think this would probably be a little summary from you would be good.
All right. So I apologize. Which one are you looking at next? Because there's two.
You're looking at, it's item 6B2, the science. 5 programs extension request.
Okay. So thank you, Drew. Laura Stone King. So Plymouth State is requesting that the board formally approve an extension to the 5 science programs. These were new programs that were initially reviewed to begin at Plymouth State, and were provided a one-year approval set to expire July 31st, 2020.
Any questions from board members? No, that's pretty self-explanatory. Motion.
Somebody else want to read this one?
Sure.
this is Ann.
Ann Lane. The State Board of Education moves to grant Plymouth State University an extension of these five programs from May 31st, 2020 to July 31st, 2022. PSEP is Ed 612.22 Middle Level Science for grades 5 through 8 post baccalaureate. ED 612.24 Earth Space Science for grades 7 through 12 post baccalaureate. ED 612.25 Life Sciences for grades 7 through 12 post baccalaureate. ED 612.26 Chemistry for grades 7 through 12 post baccalaureate. ED 612.27 Physics for post baccalaureate.
Second by Sally. Roll call.
Sally Griffin. Hello, Sally. Hello.
Sally Griffin. Hi. Yes.
Okay. Ann Lane.
Yes.
Kate Cassidy.
Yes.
Cindy Shagman.
Yes.
Phil Nazaro.
Yes.
Helen Honoro.
Yes.
Drew Klein.
Abstain.
Thank you.
Okay. Item three here, Advanced Level 4 Programs Extension Request.
Hi, it's Mary. Do you want me to give you a little overview?
Sure.
Our advanced programs were on a different calendar. They currently are fully approved by NCATE, and NCATE is turns into CAPE. Does that make sense? They're moving to CAPE. So CAPE asked us to move our visit to the fall of 2021. And so we're asking for an extension until then when we're having our next visit. And they will then be on the same schedule as our initial programs. They're only going to do a four-year accreditation so that all advanced and initial programs at the university are on one calendar.
Okay. Yep. Any questions or discussion?
Okay. The State Board of Education moved to grant Plymouth State University an extension to these core programs from June 30, 2020 to February 28, 2022. PSUPEP, ED 614.04, school principal, master's in post-baccalaureate in special education. ED 614.05, school superintendent, special
ed.
Ed
specialist, not
ed specialist. Oh, sorry. ED 614.11, library media specialist. Masters of Education, post-baccalaureate, and ED 614.15, Special Ed Administrator, Masters of Education.
Yeah, and we know that the first one was a specialist or not.
It's specialist.
Okay, do we have a second?
I'll second her.
Roll call.
For the record, could you just, it was Sally that made the motion, and who seconded it?
Cindy seconded.
Cindy, okay. Roll call, Sally Griffin?
Yes.
Ann Lane?
Yes.
Kate Cassidy?
Yes.
Cindy Shagman?
Yes.
Phil Nazaro?
Yes.
Helen Honoro?
Yes.
Drew Klein?
Abstain.
Thank you.
Okay. So we are a few minutes away from our public hearing. Just wanted everybody to know that. Next on the agenda is our non-public school approval, commissioner's non-public school approval designation renewal report.
Is it okay if I leave? It's Mary.
Yes, Mary. Thank you. All done.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Shereen. Yes, this is Shereen, representing the Office of Non-Public Schools. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Barely.
Can you speak up a little bit?
Okay, how about this?
Better.
Okay, maybe if I take myself off speak, does this sound better?
Yeah,
much better.
Oh, no, I can't hear you. Okay. If I speak loudly, does everybody hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So we are almost at the end of approving our non-public schools for 2020 into 2023 or 2025, depending on the type of approval they have from us. We have altogether 10 schools I have here to present to you. Four schools seek to renew their attendance approval status, four schools, and six schools seek to renew their program approval status, more formally known attendance and program approval status. As an update before we begin, before we take questions, one of the schools in Section D noted Cardinal LaCroix Academy. I recommended a conditional approval status given that they have two inspection reports that are outstanding. I still recommend them for conditional approval status, but I did want to provide an update in terms of where they are, given that when my report was written, it was 3 weeks ago. So the school has completed its fire inspection as of last week from the Manchester Fire Department, which indicated that they received a passing grade in every category. And so that's one of two reports completed that were outstanding. The second report, the health inspection, has not yet happened. It is scheduled for tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., so I wanted to share that with you as well. Again, given that their status is not complete, or rather their application is not complete, I shall continue to recommend conditional approval status for them. And open for questions.
Are there any questions?
Can you list?
Nobody has their hand raised at this time.
Oh, sorry.
I think Kate has a question.
Drew, can they have that list, the conditions listed? Oh, Drew, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay.
You want to know about listing the conditions?
Yeah, listing the conditions so we don't go
listing
back and forget.
Listing the conditions.
Listing.
Okay. Shereen,
yep.
Was that clear? Kate wanted to know if you could list the conditions for the conditional approval.
Does that mean that Kate would like me to do you mean in the executive report you'd like me to go ahead and list what they are missing?
I'm sorry, Kate?
On the motion.
You say that again?
Drew, on the motion? Yeah.
So she was hoping we could list the conditions under the conditional approval on the motion. When we make the motion to...
So being very clear on what is the problem.
Yeah.
They're missing two reports. They haven't met their deadline.
Yes. I got you. Absolutely. So I will say the reason, of course, moving forward, I will say specifically why they are only approved for conditional approval. Oh, do you want me to go ahead and state the statement as it should be?
I think that would work.
Okay. In Section D, it should read the very first line, I move that the State Board accept and approve the following school for conditional approval status for the period of July 1st, 2020 through August 31, 2020. Cardinal LaCroix Academy needs to provide the Office of Non-Public Schools with two inspection reports, one for fire and one for health. Upon receiving
okay.
these two reports, the office will bring a new motion next month for the board to consider approval.
Okay. Angela, did you catch all that?
I did, but I can also get it from Shireen directly. Yes.
Okay. So,
absolutely.
Well,
I will.
Well, I was just saying, for the purposes of a motion, I think someone could make a motion with the, pulling the language that Shireen just read for the motion. So just to state that the motion will be conditional approval using the language that Shireen just read.
Sorry, I probably used too much language.
That's okay.
I can, yeah.
Yeah, that's no, I think that's fine. I think if we had somebody who wanted to make that motion.
I'll try.
Okay. Anne's going to give it a shot.
You can just say so moved.
Oh, there you go.
So moved.
So, okay, there you go. Anne makes the motion. Cindy seconds it.
Correct.
So we need a roll call.
Roll call. Sally Griffin.
Yes.
Anne Lane.
Yes.
Kate Cassidy.
Yes.
Cindy Shagnon.
Yes.
Phil Nazzaro.
Yes.
Helen Honoro.
Yes.
Drew Klein.
Abstain. So it is a few minutes after 10. We need to open the public hearing. So I'm going to gavel in the public hearing for vocational rehabilitation. I've got Cindy's disorder
yes.
here. Vocational Rehabilitation Program. 1000. So that is open. We have anyone on the line who's called in? Okay, we have no one called in. If we do, oh, okay. You want to go ahead and do it now?
Yes.
Okay, Amanda has a statement she has to make for this hearing.
I just wanted to publicly let everyone know that since the initial proposal, we took all of the language that had been copied from the federal regulations word for word. We removed that and just pointed to the federal regulations. Since then, I've received a copy of an audit from a legislative budget assistant asking us to add language back in, which is fine. It needed to be done, but we need to go down to the bare bones to be able to make it more user-friendly. So I've been working with Voc Rehab, Lisa Hatt, and we've been working on that language. We've been reviewing other states and how they put language into their regulations. I'm almost done with that, but the final proposal will look drastically different than what this initial proposal looks like. So I am going to request that we hold another public hearing based
Good.
On that language. So I just wanted to let everyone know that they will see that publicly before anyone votes on it.
Okay. That makes sense. I'm glad we're going to do a second public hearing with that much of a rewrite. Okay, so we're going to leave this public hearing open for half an hour, but we'll continue with our agenda. So we have the rest of the Commissioner's Non-Public School Approval Designation Renewal Report. Do we have any other questions on the other schools?
I move that the State Board accept and approve the following schools for continued attendance approval status for the period of July 1st, 2020 through June 30th, 2023. His Connection, Lupine Montessori, and Victory Baptist School.
Second.
Okay, we need a roll call.
Just to confirm for the record, that was Sydney Shagnon making the motion, seconded by Sally.
No, Anne Lane second.
Oh, thanks. Anne Lane. Roll call, Sally Griffin?
Yes.
Ann Lane?
Yes.
Kate Cassidy? Kate? Cindy Shagdon?
Yes.
Bill Nazaro?
Yes.
Helen Honoro?
Yes.
Going back to Kate, Kate Cassidy?
Sorry, I was on mute.
She got thumbs up.
Oh, there she is. Kate. Kate Cassidy.
I'm right here.
Okay.
Do you have me, Angela?
You voted yes. Yes, I'm just looking. Yes. I'm doing a roll call. Okay. Stu Klein.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, and then we need the final motion.
I move that the State Board accept and approve the following schools for continued attendance and program approval status for the period of July 1st, 2020 through June 30th, 2025, Esterbrook School, New Hampton School, St. Thomas Aquinas High School, Tri-City Christian Academy, Trinity Christian School in Concord, and White Mountain School. Second.
Sally seconds. That was Ann making the motion.
Roll call, Sally Griffin?
Yes.
Ann Lane?
Yes.
Kate Cassidy?
Yes.
Cindy Shagman?
Yes.
Bill Nazaro?
Yes.
Helen Honoro?
Yes.
Drew Klein?
Okay.
Thank you. Thank
right.
you.
Thank you so much. So we're going to move on to charter school reports and updates from Jane Waterhouse. We begin with Hartwood Public Charter School Startup Extension Request and Update. Jane, are you on the line? Holding.
Yes,
does anyone
I'm
know?
Here.
Oh, great.
You can hear me? Oh, great. Huh? Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
No, look, I'm just listening to this. Everyone hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
They still have one public hearing left, but but Voc Rehab, I had to make a statement because our final.
I think we're picking up Amanda in the background.
She's working from home.
So should I just get started?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. This is Jane Waterhouse. I'm here today with Hartwood Public Charter School. It was authorized by the State Board on November 18, 2018. The school developers' a plan was to open the school in August of 2019, but financial constraints prevented the school from opening. The school developers submitted a progress report to the department, and they're requesting an extension to the school's startup period. On this call, we have Courtney Vashaw, Stacey Zemlo, and Bethany Bond to answer any questions you might have.
Does anyone have any questions? Yeah, Ann?
Hi, good morning. Thank you for being here. I appreciate your challenges you're facing. I guess I need to ask a straightforward question, and is there, do you have any concerns about your sustainability, your financial sustainability?
I can do, like, if I'm running a race, I can do nine, a little less than nine. If I'm just
true.
Yeah.
We're picking up a conversation between Amanda and somebody. Is there any way she could be told to mute or?
Yeah. Let me work on that. Jane, did you hear?
I have
Ann's
muted.
Question?
I have muted Angela. I have muted her line so that we're not picking up the background.
Okay.
Great. No, I wasn't able to hear that question.
You were not?
No, I did not. There
was the question was for any representatives from Hartwood who were on the line, and it was, do they have any concerns about their ability to raise finances needed to get the school going?
Okay, this is a question for Stacey Zemla. Stacey, if you are, not Stacey, Courtney Vassa, if you're on the line, can you please answer the question?
If Stacey is on the line, can you please press 5-star?
This is Jane Waterhouse. I'm not sure why they're not answering. I've been in contact with them several times this morning, and so I know they're on the call. I'm not sure why they're able to get through.
Good morning. This is Susan Zemla. Can you hear me?
Yes. If you could speak up just a little bit louder, that would help.
Sorry. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Now?
That's
yes.
Good.
Okay. Sorry about that. Sorry. Do we have questions about the sustainability of Heartwood? With federal funding or funding from the state, we believe that we will be sustainable in time. But initially, we really need that money. We're not going to open without it.
I have a follow-up
that
question.
That answers your question.
In your in the summary, it mentioned the inability to get the federal charter school startup grant. That was part of the money that the legislature refused to accept. Is that what you're waiting for?
Either that, yes, or funding from the US DOE. We did apply for a federal grant last summer, but we were not awarded. We don't know exactly why. I don't know if it's because the state was getting an award. I think we would just need to, we need funding from someone. Startup funding. If that answers your question.
Drew?
Yes, Helen?
I have my hand raised electronically. I'm not sure.
Okay,
I guess I'm a little unclear on the status, and I don't know whether Jane or the representative from Heartwood would address this. How is this different than any other charter that gets approved, which we did back in November of 2018? And there would have been a budget. I don't have that. It wasn't included with this. What didn't happen in terms of the initial funding that a charter that gets approved gets? Where's the downfall in the budget that was originally submitted to us?
This is Jane Waterhouse.
Okay.
So the charter school startup fund, the grant that we have that provided startup funds for all the more recent charter schools expired, and they're all used up. We applied for another.
Jane, can I interrupt really quickly? Jane, if you could
closer. You
move closer to the mic or speak louder into the phone because we can't hear you all that well.
Okay. Should I start again?
Yes, please, and that's good.
Okay. Is this better?
Better.
Okay. So the federal grant that the department has had that provided startup funds for all the more recent charter schools, we used up all those funds. We applied for another grant, which we received last August 2019 for $46 million. That's the grant that the legislature has not approved acceptance of the funds. So that, because we were awarded that grant, then no other charter applications for direct
funding from the Federal Department of Education can be approved as long as we have an active charter school startup grant. So Heartwood was not approved for their grant. Until these grant funds are approved, the department does not have any more startup funds for charter schools. Some charter schools in the past have been able to open after pursuing their own fundraising and sometimes with a personal benefactor. But Heartwood is not able to access enough grants and funds to open their school right now. They're awaiting approval and hoping for the legislature to approve the initial payment from this grant.
Helen, did you have a follow-up?
In terms of the budget that was initially presented, was there a component, I mean, there would have had to be a component of other grants, fundraising, some other sources of income beside the startup grant. What happened with those?
I think that would be a question directly.
This is Jane Waterhouse. That would be a question for Stacy Semla.
Stacey,
hi,
can you
hear me? This is Stacy. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. We would never have been able to open without funding. We have not raised any money yet. We have been in a place where we've been waiting, knowing, or hoping that we would receive this funding and then really move forward from the award. So we have not raised money. We have communicated with people within our community. We've done some legwork, but we really need the money to open.
I think Cindy had a question.
Yes, I know in the process many times it's the chicken or the egg type thing as far as finding facilities where you could have your school. But I was just curious, you said you met with realtors, private sellers, explored sites, from historic buildings to portable classrooms to yurts. That's interesting. That's Montgomery and Brown's little tiny tent buildings. I would not be thrilled with a school in a yurt, but whatever. That's just my opinion. But anyway, is it the thing that you don't have the funding yet to say these people we want this, or is it that you really just haven't found anything appropriate, even if you did have the funding to start a grant?
It is the funding. I think we have a developer in the area who's done a lot of really great work working with the community in Lancaster. I think we could find something. But without the money, no one has really wanted to make any sort of long-term plans with us because we ourselves as individuals or as a foundation do not have money to back opening a school.
Also, in your last sentence in that paragraph, I'd just like you to explain a little bit more. You said, while some local partners believe in school choice personally, they fear stating so publicly. So you feel that locally there's not been any feeling that we need a charter school, or what are you actually saying there?
I think the meaning of that was just that we may have some partners that once this is rolling will kind of come out of the woodwork and support us, but are not necessarily feeling confident in their positions at this time to say, yes, I support charter schools.
one other.
I'm sure another question.
Uh-huh. One other question and kind of observation. In addition to the insecurity of the federal grant coming through this Congress, of course, that could, the composition of the legislature could change in November. We'll see what happens there. But also this COVID crisis has put a tremendous stress on bank loans and everything. And I'm just a little concerned with you trying to remedy this and move forward in the midst of this crisis, which we now feel may go, people say, may go on for a year or so. And it seems like it would affect your ability to move forward with anything. Just an observation.
I would agree with that. I think we're asking for a little more time because we've really spent a lot of time developing this, and due to circumstances thus far, we have not been able to move forward. And so we're hopeful that in time that is something that could happen. We really would like this to happen. And so if we could ask for 2 years, we might ask for 2 years. Due to COVID, but we thought one would probably be most appropriate because we weren't sure if you would allow for a two-year extension. So we thought we would start with one.
Ann Lane has a question.
Good morning. As a public school, I might, as Cindy reflected, rethink a yurt as a possible location for your school. I would be hard-pressed to have you meet with the health and fire regulations required of a public school. Just an FYI.
Thank you. Yes. It was really like a supplement, like an additional structure, not a series of yurts to house students in, but maybe to have some kind of outdoor gathering space. Perhaps it shouldn't have been listed in the letter as a possible option for a school building. I'm sorry if that was misleading.
So I just to make clear here what we're talking about. I remember your presentation to the board, and one of the reasons I remember it was because your school was so unique. It's the first Waldorf public school in the state, correct?
Place-based.
I'm sorry, what?
It's a place-based.
Place-based.
Model.
Okay.
I can't hear Cindy. Whatever you guys are saying there, I can't hear you.
Place-based. Yeah, and you were and you had a really unique. A really unique approach to public education focused on community and building your community. And I just remember being pretty impressed with what you were trying to do. And it's very disheartening to think that you wouldn't be able to start because we have a dispute over this charter school startup money. I see, given the fact that your plans relied on that charter school startup funding, and we have that blocked in the legislature, I see no reason why we wouldn't grant your extension request. It's an innovative, interesting, unique idea that I think could be, in some ways, a model for the rest of the state if we can get it off the ground.
Hello? Excuse me?
All right.
Hi, this is Courtney Vasha. I've been trying to get in for the past 20 minutes. can anyone hear me?
Yeah, you're actually a little loud.
Okay, I will. I'll happily turn down. First of all, I thank you very much for recognizing the unique situation that the school is in. You know, Stacy has been trying very hard to articulate the challenges that we've faced with this situation. And I'm sorry, I wasn't able to catch the name of the person who requested it first about our budget. My understanding is that traditionally charter schools have been awarded, you know, $1 million to $1.5 million to start. And in working with Lisa Lavois up here with the North Country Charter Academy, she kind of laughed at me when I said that, you know, yes, we've been approved, but there's absolutely no money available for us. And she said, that's impossible. You can't start a school without startup funds. And back to our budget question, the way that our budget was primarily established was that we could reach sustainability probably by the end of year three if we had had startup funds to get us rolling, because we had initially planned a staggered start to establish our lower grades and then roll up to our upper grades. But we would need that time and that per pupil capita expenditure to be able to reach that sustainability. So, you know, I really hope that, you know, you can see how this is such a unique school and that it is such a unique time that we're in with these crazy budget constraints. And that hopefully by the time COVID is resolved and by the time that we look at this different, you know, level of funding, whatever may happen through the elections, that we'll really be in a place to be able to take this vision and make it a reality.
Great. Courtney, if I'm not mistaken, you've got a master's in education, right?
I have a CAGS, actually, yes, in curriculum assessment. And yes, I do have a master's in education as well.
I thought your school was really unique and interesting, and it'd be a real shame if we lose it.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that. And to the question about partners who are interested in supporting us but are afraid to do so publicly, that includes some of our public administrators up here, public school administrators, who have had private talks with us and completely understand that education is not a one-size-fits-all approach for kids, and they're really interested in innovating some of those ideas. But it's politically very challenging for them to be able to say so. So I think that there's kind of this feeling of people know what's best for kids, but there's a political sensitivity to that, and they don't want to be on the wrong side of that conversation because it may affect their jobs.
Yeah. That's not the first time we've heard that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we appreciate you sharing that with us.
Yeah,
I think Anne's ready.
Pursuant to RSA 194-B:3,11, I move the State Board of Education authorizes Hartwood Charter School to extend the startup period for 1 year.
Second by Sally.
Roll call. Sally Griffin.
Yes.
Anne Lane.
Yes.
Kate Cassidy.
Yes.
Cindy Shagman.
Yes.
Phil Nazaro.
Yes.
Helen Honoro.
Yes.
Drew Klein. Drew, did you abstain?
I abstain.
Thank you.
Okay. We have an annual public charter school progress report update. But first, it's 10:30, so I'm going to gavel out our first public hearing. Our second public hearing is on the Robotics Education Fund. Is there anybody on the line? We have nobody on the line for that.
Thank you from Chartwood, from Hartwood.
Yeah, thank you so much for attending.
Thank you.
For the public hearing, the notice that went out noticing the public hearing required people to pre-register to call in for the public hearing. We had no one pre-register for it, but we're opening the public hearing now, and we'll hold it open until 11. And that's on Robotics Education Fund. Okay, so moving back, we are back to Jane, the annual public charter school progress report update.
Hi, this is Jane Waterhouse. I think Nate Green was going to talk about the annual progress report update.
Nate, are you with us?
Hi, Drew. This is Nate Green from the Department of Ed. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Excellent. So in conversations with Caitlin, we've been doing some analysis of the charter school annual reports. We're not quite at a point where we're ready to present that analysis to the board. One of the things that we're trying to do is determine what are the most salient points in terms of accountability for charter schools. And one of the things that we're sort of running up against right now is trying to determine what we feel is important as a department, but also what the board might feel is important from these reports. One of the things that we've talked about is maybe just providing the reports themselves directly to the board as opposed to just our analysis of that, so that we can maybe have a conversation with the board about what are the pieces that you know, you all feel like are the pieces that you want to have oversight as the state charter authorizer. So I think we want to have a little bit more of a conversation before we present the analysis that we have so far. Is that okay?
Yeah. Yeah, any other questions?
When you're doing this analysis, I personally would like two categories. I would love for you to pull out some of the schools, Great Bay, Ledyard, Next, Pace, those that are set up for low-risk students that, you know, they have a much more challenging way of, you know, we expect that they will kind of be below the state standards in ELA and math, and we hope that they will have higher graduation rates. But I would like a growth cycle on those. How have they improved those numbers, not just that they're below? And some of the other strong foundations founders that are not particularly set up for low, you know, high-risk students, I would like a separate category for them to see, are they really meeting and how much below are they?
Well, they also, and I'm glad you brought that up because I had exactly the same thought. I was going to say the same thing, so you beat me to it. But also, we have... So even within the schools that aren't designed specifically for low-income or special needs or struggling kids, you still have a lot of charter schools that have a large portion of their population being kids who come from certain special groups. So Founders is a good example of a school that is not designed necessarily for kids who are struggling, but they just the pool they draw from in Manchester and beyond, but mostly Manchester, happens to be a lot of kids that wind up coming to Founders because they were struggling. And so if we, I think that's just a consideration, and we've talked about this before. So when we have a report, we can look at the percentage of kids they have that are low income and that are have socioeconomic issues and that maybe came into the school with low grades. I mean, I think that's just important. So we're measuring the growth and what the value added is that the school brings versus just the outcome, because it doesn't help. It helps. It's nice to be able to see, well, they have a low proficiency in math, but if we know that their students have struggled going into it, that's just much clearer, gives us a better picture.
Exactly. Yeah, so this is Nate again. And, I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head there. When we first sat down and Jane and I were going through the analysis that she had done, much of the academic side of it, we were just looking at low academic scores in comparison to the state average. And our conversations back and forth, both between Jane and I and also Caitlin and I, have really been there are so many other factors that are involved with a charter school, whether it's the mission and vision of the charter school, whether it's the intent of the charter school to graduate students who are at risk of not being able to graduate, that just presenting, say, a picture of the academics in comparison to the state average, which is sort of where we're at right now, is not enough of a full picture.
Well, plus we also need that, and yeah, I know you and I and Nate and Jane have talked about this too, but we definitely want to see not just how they compare to the state average, but how do they compare to the local district.
So I think to really, you know, give a full analysis of where the charter schools are at right now, we just need a little bit more time to provide you with that that more kind of full in-depth analysis.
Yeah, I really appreciate you guys working so hard on that.
Drew, I have my hand electronically raised.
Okay.
I'm going to stop doing that and just jump right in.
Yeah, go ahead.
There we go. My hand's forward now. May I?
Yeah, please. Go ahead.
Okay. Nate, while, you know, I totally appreciate, particularly in schools that have as their identified mission, as part of what the school is structured to do, I feel like we still have to stay on top of if they're not able to do it. So I'd like to know about that. I think it's an expectation that we're going to see lower scores, for example. Lower graduation rates concerns me more because one of the reasons this, you know, a charter school might be set up is to try and capture those students so that they don't become dropouts and that they're really working hard. So I'd want to see how the schools are dealing with that. You know, something isn't working. True that the population is somewhat self-selecting, but at the same time, they're at a school that has been or is being supported and is holding itself out to be able to address those questions. So I would expect lower scores in some of this, but the graduation rate particularly concerns me, and I'd like to know what these schools are doing to try and address that. I think we also, unfortunately, are seeing some frequent flyers. The issue of low proficiency in math, for example, at Foundation is not new. The concerns about low proficiency in math at Gate City is not new. So those are, and they were going to address it. When they came for their five-year review, they were going to be addressing it. So if in the annual progress reports we're seeing the same kind of thing, that's something that I would particularly want to know, that in their five-year review this was identified and this is what they said they were going to do. I think Gate City was going to get a new math program. They were going to do a bunch of things. So those are the from the annual review and anything that was identified in their progress report, that would be something I'd want to see. And then my friend Kate is probably going to be saying the same thing, but maybe she'll chime in, but though not having the reports, late quarterly financial reports, audits, those kinds of things, we said we want to jump on that stuff sooner and know about it. So I'd also like to, and I think at one point, like with respect to the reports that people needed to do about physical discipline, about restraints, we weren't getting responses, and we were provided with a report. Like, we called them on this day, and I'd like to know the trajectory of what's happening on the fact that they're failing to provide the reports. That's, you know, to me, there's smoke when we're seeing late reports and audits and anything else that's a requirement, and we ought to investigate before it's a fire. Okay, anybody still there?
Hi, okay. Yeah, thank you, Helen. Yep. Jane and I have sat down as well. It looks. Sorry. This is Nate. So Jane and I have sat down, and we've really, you know, with the new template that charter schools are going to be submitting in the next couple of months for their annual report for this past school year, we've really tried to organize it around essentially those three categories that we know you as the board have really been requesting. One piece is the organization and management of it, that sustainability piece. There's the fiscal and reporting piece, and then there's the academic piece. And we've tried to make the report itself much more concise going forward, so that rather than us providing an analysis of a much larger report that has a lot of different elements, we've really tried to organize it around those three categories so we can present the report itself directly to the board for each of the charter schools. And you're going to see all of those items in there. You're going to see if there have been reports that were late. You're going to be able to see the financials for each of the charter schools as well as academic performance.
Okay.
I think one of the things that we've been...
All right, thank you, Nate. Anne has a question.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Hi, Nate. Thank you for this report. I appreciate that it's a snapshot, but for myself, what would make it relevant, and I think this has been alluded to a degree, is you reflect on 4 to 5 year cohorts. So what would be useful is actually see a snapshot of 4 to 5 years if they have been consistently low proficiency or outstanding or late on reports from year 4 through year 5, do we see a change? So because what we're looking at is a group of children who are matriculating, and as we follow them through, we will either see progress made when new children enter the system or when some students leave the system perhaps. But a generalized comment is less meaningful to me than one that would be broken down by year.
Also, I'm very, very concerned with the Gate City where it says annual financial audit outstanding for 2018. I don't know if we have a process. It seems like if it said outstanding for 2019, I would not be concerned. But we're going into the second year when they have not submitted a financial audit. To me, is very troublesome, and I don't know if we have some method of saying either you get it in or, you know, you can't go forward unless I would not like them to be 2 years behind with the crisis of sometimes financial we found there that happen when they haven't submitted.
Yep. Kate has her hand up.
Hi, guys.
Okay.
Nate? Is Nate still there and Jane?
Yeah. Yes, I am.
Hello?
Yes, I'm
can
still
anybody
here.
Hear me? Okay. 16 years ago, we had a lady from the state education, New Hampshire Education, came in, and they audited us on our vision. We had to write a report for this, and apparently you don't do it anymore. Am I correct? Because it's really important about the vision. Very important. And they did. They used to audit. We were audited. We all sat. We had to have a report. We had to have examples. So that is very concerning, but we don't, that you don't practice that anymore with the vision. The other thing is, of course, all charters are different for different types of children and special needs. They're all different. But the math, the low-end math, that's a real big concern, is a common denominator, as everybody has said. We are charter, yes. However, I would, something's got to, we got to do something to improve charter schools, something to improve this. We just can't let it go, oh, it's charter school, so we can let that go. We can't do that. This is math. I mean, believe me when I say people come in here and they cannot even know how to do a division or multiplication. We're talking grown adults. So we need to start math. We just can't say it's charter school. We have to do something about it. These schools have to do something and be held accountable, depending on what school we're looking at. The other thing is these financial audit reports, I know. 2018, Jane? Wow. Can I help you? Can I call these people for you to get these in? I mean, I know you're all busy down there. And I know I constantly complain about, you know, the late report. But a real big concern is these low scores in math and what type of charter we're looking at. But we just can't say, oh, it's expected it's charter. We can't do that. We've got to, these schools are going to be, I know I hold them very highly accountable for their actions, but we've got to, they've got to come up with a different way.
Hi, this is Nate. I have my, yep, yeah.
Did everybody hear me, or was I talking to the wind?
We heard you.
Yep, okay. So just a quick response on that, because that has been an ongoing concern and frustration for us here at the department as well. You know, both Jane, myself,
forever,
and Caitlin have consistently reached out. You know, there's a ton of communication that goes back and forth between us and the charter schools. Unfortunately, one of the positions that we're in as a department is we don't have any recourse when a charter school just doesn't turn in those reports. There isn't a consequence or a punishment that the department has on our end if they're not giving us the reports. We did try to introduce some legislation this past year that would introduce some level of consequence that the department would be able to impose on a charter school if they were missing those deadlines. And unfortunately, that legislation didn't go anywhere. It's something that we're still working on, because we do, you know, we can call a charter school every single day, and at the end of the day, if they haven't given us the report despite all of that communication, there's not a lot that we can do as a department to force them to give that to us, aside from, you know, make the information public to let you as a board know that they're just not turning it in.
Well, we can fix that in a little later.
That report? Are you kidding me? Wow.
Hi, everybody. This is Caitlin. I'm actually physically sitting here with Nate, so you can't see that my hand is raised. Yes, the Department of Education doesn't have any repercussions for charter schools. For regular public schools, we have the ability to withhold or to hold, anyways, state funding, but we don't have that ability here with charter schools. Additionally, if the charter schools had a large amount of federal reporting, which actually requires an audit to be done, we have the ability to, federal funding that has the report required to be done, we could hold federal funding, but we do not have that ability with state funding.
Yeah, and that's something, so the, just to clarify for anybody who's listening, these reports, whether it's financial reports or other reports that charter schools are required to give, our rules are not really as clear as they should be on what the consequences are for not filing required materials. And that's something that Shannon and I have talked about and Nate and I have talked about, and it's something we'll be working on addressing in proposed revisions to the rules going forward. So Anne has a question.
Hi, Nate. This may be too arduous or odious, but what I would find interesting from a data review perspective is while we're looking at the charter schools and their proficiencies, how difficult would it be to produce a report of the public schools regionally and what their proficiencies are, and so that we can make a comparison, a demographic comparison? Because that would be relevant.
Absolutely.
We used to get one, Ann.
That's one of the things that we can do with our iReport system now. So we can go in both to iReport and to our the analyze features, iExplore, and you can select charter schools, you can select public schools, and you can look at a lot of different variables across the board. All that's public out on our website right now. And it's something that, like, if there were very specific data variables that the board wanted us to compare, it's pretty easy for us to put that together.
And if you remember, we had Dina Raybuck come to the State Board of Education meeting. It might have actually almost been 2 years ago at this point, to give you guys an overview of how that system works. We would gladly have her come in and do that for you again, so you have familiarity with those tools.
Okay, Drew,
I have my hand raised.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Phil, go ahead.
So it's been raised for a bit, so I'm going to go back just a little bit and reinforce the point Helen made, that the smoke and fire, that I think reporting is absolutely like one of the first indicators, a lead indicator that there's a problem within an organization. So
absolutely.
Certainly if we can edit the rules in a way to, and like sooner rather than later, to allow us to have some sort of repercussion or some sort of action that occurs when reporting starts lagging, that would be, I think, incredibly important. Two, I think it's like a little bit off of what Anne said, but like another direction on this. So these aren't all our charter schools, right? So we have 11 of them that have academic proficiency challenges, and all of those have math, some ELA and whatnot, but they all have math. I wonder how we could do some sort of analysis into these specific schools to see what trends occur across them that might allow us to recommend some sort of interventions or changes to the program or something that could allow us to see a layer deeper is like what is causing these math problems, if there's similarities across this cohort or this group, so that we can potentially help them fix those challenges.
Yeah, and just to follow up on that, for some clarity about math, is a problem statewide.
Yeah.
In all types of schools, public, non-public, charter, the math proficiency scores are a real problem. And the department's fully aware of it, and there's just, it's a tough challenge. Caitlin?
Yes?
Were you having, I heard your name. I didn't know if you wanted to speak.
Oh, I think somebody else said my name, but I...
Okay.
No, I did. Drew?
Yes.
Drew, it's Kate. Hey,
okay,
Kate.
Go ahead.
Caitlin?
Yes.
Can you... do you remember when the state used to put out a report, charter schools, I'm trying to remember it, charter schools versus the public schools as far as the test scores? Do you remember that report?
I don't remember specifically relative to that, but we have a report that shows how all schools do, and the charter schools are included in that report, so you could very easily filter the charter schools that way.
Yeah, they were, I'm looking for it now. I have it on my thing here. Okay.
You want to, I have
I'll look at,
have
I'll look at some other reports we used to do. Okay, I'm all set. Thanks, Drew.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay.
This is Nate again, just real quick. Because I know, I think, Kate, you had mentioned the mission and vision piece of it. The mission
yeah.
and vision is still part of the renewal that we do with each of the charter schools. When we go in and do the site visits, we talk about their mission and vision. We sit down with different groups. We sit down with the teachers and the students. So that's where that review is located. And we look to see, you know, not just in terms of the academics, but the overall goal and vision of the charter school, is that being fulfilled? So that is still happening. It's just part of the renewal process.
It's exactly that. Is, you know, are we maybe... Are you meeting your vision, you know?
Yep, exactly.
All right. Well, thank you for that report.
Thank you.
And for all the hard work you're doing on it. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Caitlin and Nate. I'm still thinking.
All right. Up next... we have the commissioner's update. Commissioner is in his office, but if he would like to participate in the room.
It's up to you. I can come over there or not. It's all, yeah, if you'd like, I can come over and join you. I'll be right there.
I mean, I think we can hear you.
We have a seat with your name on it.
We do, but I'm wondering if we're hearing better talking in his headset in his office. You're coming through really clearly right now.
Great. So I will just go ahead and start right here and jump into the commissioner's update for you. The first thing that I have for you is a consultation that I am required to do in my duties of commissioner under RSA 21N4, Roman numeral 8, which states that with the advice of the State Board of Education and in consultation with the deputy commissioner and the directors of the affected divisions, I am basically coming to you for a consultation on the reappointment of Stephen Appleby to the position of Division Director for the Division of Educator Support in Higher Education. He will be reappointed. I'm going to, you know, make a recommendation for his reappointment coming up in late July, early August, I think it is. But I wanted to consult with you relative to his reappointment and see if there's any feedback from the board relative to the work that he is doing for us as a division director in that division. Any feedback?
If I can just start off by saying that since I've been working with staff here, Steve has been incredibly helpful and thoughtful and has really been just a joy to work with, and very data-driven, very interested in getting to real answers, and I just can't say enough about the work, the quality of work that he's done in that position, and I hope that this goes through unanimously.
Yeah.
I'm getting a lot
okay,
of
great. All right, wonderful. Thank you for that feedback, and that will be incorporated into our recommendation to the governor and the governor and council. The next item that I wanted to bring to your attention is, and it's a little bit of an issue, we're trying to get a little bit ahead of it as well, but as we look towards September and re-engaging the schools, one of the possible issues that's coming up are opportunities for our education preparation students. We have had at least one of our larger districts that normally would take up to 18 student teachers is saying that they will not take any teachers this year. And so that will obviously significantly curtail the student teaching opportunities for students. And of course, these are part of their ability to get their certificate and to get through those programs. And so we're trying to work with schools to make sure that we continue to do whatever we can to support opportunities, teaching, student teacher opportunities in the schools. But just wanted to put that on your radar as we continue to work with the different districts to make sure that we create as many opportunities as possible for our students in the schools. And I don't know if anybody, I can move on from that, but I just, if there's any conversation or questions, I want to pause for a moment.
None in this room. Anybody on the phone?
This is Helen. Commissioner, I think that we had talked about this a couple meetings ago, wondering if this was going to be an issue. I think anything we can possibly do to help the schools figure out a way to take these student teachers, it will be really helpful because, A, they need to get recommended out of their programs here to go to wherever they're going to teach, and that may be New Hampshire, but it might not be. So we want to try to do anything we can possibly do to make sure they can be recommended for certification.
Yeah. So we're all in agreement on that.
Commissioner Ann has a question.
Okay.
I'm actually surprised, Commissioner, based on the opportunity to use this resource so you can have smaller group educational settings. You can perhaps have remote instruction by more vulnerable staff with the use of the support of a younger, less vulnerable student teacher. I find this surprising.
Okay. So I'll even just add to that as well. Generally, these student teachers tend to be very tech savvy as well, which is helpful in many of our classrooms these days. So.
Also, it seems very sad to me that they are remanded completely. And also, since many districts are looking at a hybrid approach and everybody's trying to figure out how you can have some at home and some at school and move all these moving parts. And as Ann said, having the ability to utilize these young, tech-savvy, energetic, new idea people. And as we know, we don't know what the future looks like. We may be hybrid for a lot longer, and so I think this type of training for our student interns would be excellent. So I'm surprised.
Great.
Also.
So we are continuing to work with districts to try and make sure that doesn't become a problem. The next topic that I wanted to speak with you about is our task force, the School Transition Reopening Redesign Task Force, or START. That work is about at a midpoint at this point is the way I guess I would describe it. So we constituted the initial task force and work groups. It's a group of about 60 different folks from all different kinds of backgrounds. We broke into 6 work groups that are working on specific types of topics, whether that is instruction or student wellness or technology or operations. We initially met as the work groups, or when I say we, the work groups initially met. They generated a lot of possible survey-type questions. We went out and we did a survey of parents, teachers, administrators, and wellness personnel in our schools. And we got an overwhelming response to that. Ultimately, we had 56,000 completed surveys. So a lot of data. And that is being worked on by AIR, who is our partner in this. They're the facilitator for this, and they are going through that data at this point in time. Earlier this week, they did do their initial presentations of the data to the work groups. In terms of trying to say, here's what's out there as we continue to push that forward and work toward recommendations. After the work groups get done, then they will push those recommendations back to the task force, which is a Representative of each of the different work groups has members on the task force, and we will coalesce those into specific recommendations the task force was designed, is to make recommendations to the governor, to the department, to school leaders about reopening in September. Because what we know is that, our school leaders ultimately in local control are going to make local decisions, and I think that's appropriate, given that the circumstances on the ground in different parts of the state are different, so it will likely not look the same in September everywhere in the state. But we want to make sure we get them good information. I do want to just comment on one thing, because there's a lot of activity across the country, and I've read so many reopening guides from states that I think I could write one in my sleep right now. But there's a lot of people are working on it. I still am very comfortable with our timing of having our initial set of recommendations, we'll call those kind of high-level recommendations, at the end of June from a timing standpoint, which is what our original schedule looked like. The difficulty, I think, that in this work is if you go too fast, the circumstances on the ground are changing so quickly that you may make recommendations that really become obsolete 3 or 4 weeks later. If you wait too long, then the recommendations are useless because there's not enough time to implement those recommendations. So the timing of our work was really designed around trying to get recommendations in the hands of our school leaders, who even today are working on what September will look like, but to get them information late enough that we can get as much of our information about what's happening in the, on the ground, but not too late that they can't act on them. And so we continue to kind of move those recommendations forward, and that will be happening towards the end of this month. We'll have stuff coming out. Is there any questions about START that anybody would have before I move on to the next topic?
Yes, Anne has a question.
Okay. Commissioner, thank you. I just would like have your observation on if other states, to your knowledge, have they made this level of a collaborative effort?
So, that's another way of looking at it as well. It's funny, I was just reading a report from another state this morning, and I think that all states are trying to make sure that they have a lot of voices, but generally it is, the one I was reading this morning, they had gathered together in Mississippi a team of 9 superintendents from around the state, and those are the ones making the recommendations. And while I think that that is a good process, and I'm sure that it works well for Mississippi, I do think that there's some value in New Hampshire, given our strong local control, given the diversity of our state in terms of different circumstances on the ground with respect to the pandemic, that we get really broad input. And so I'm happy that we have as many as 60 people working directly on the task force, but then I'm also really pleased that we have, such an overwhelming response. We've got responses from 56,000 people. That includes, I think it's 41,000 parents. It's, 11,000 teachers have weighed in on this, right? So that's really good input. So we have the opportunity to hear from everyone and to weigh all of that input into the actions and the recommendations that we make.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It almost sounds like you're going to have a plan A and a plan B.
I'm very happy to hear you say, Commissioner, that you're doing tremendous amounts of work and this type of thing, but it will be recommendations, because I know some districts like mine are doing the same level as you are. And they're really working on a big committee, 3 subcommittees composed, the subcommittees are full-time reopening, hybrid, and everything online. And every committee has, students, parents, and every aspect from transportation and all classroom teachers at every single level. It's a huge committee, huge work. And I'm so glad to hear that these things can work together, and that it would not be that all this work would go in vain because the state demands that you do certain things. I think this is a wonderful approach, and I appreciate all the work that's going into it.
Yeah, I think that was the goal, is to try and work collaboratively on this, knowing that school leaders are going to be doing design work, but that we can give them kind of a perspective that would, that is statewide and maybe even really kind of nationally and internationally perspective, whereas they're working on that local issue. When we put the two together, I think it will bring us to some good conclusions for the local communities. So the next thing that I wanted to talk about was just our summer programming. We are working hard to try and get those stood up. We typically run 67 21st century programs in the summer. I think many of you remember, I think it was last summer, Helen, that we had the opportunity to visit your programs down in Nashua and see the great opportunity for those kids. So today I have three of my programs that are going to actually be opening following the governor's guidance on opening those day camps. And many of them are not opening at this point in time, so we are trying to work with them. They service over 4,000 students in the state over the summer. We are trying to make sure that we can either solve a funding problem or a permission problem or whatever it is that they may have to try and have those take place for the students in the summer. And I just wanted to put that on your radar because it's very important for many of those students who otherwise are kind of be left on their own a little bit over the summer if we don't implement those programs. We have the programs. We know what it needs to take to run them. We just have to go ahead and execute against that. But there's a lot of, you know, we understand that there's still a lot of nervousness, you know, particularly, I mean, Helen, down in your area and the border towns where some of the pandemic effects have been more significant. Folks are nervous to get back in.
Anne has a question.
Any question?
The age group for these camps and their potential locations.
I'm sorry, say that one more time. It's hard to hear you.
What is the age for the camps you're talking about and where are they located?
It's 67 day programs or 21st century programs. They're located all over the state. They really are kind of dispersed all around the state, which is by design. And they generally are accommodating, you know, elementary and some middle school students.
Thank you.
Yep. Another question?
No, I'm just going to take a moment to gavel out the public hearing.
Okay.
Public hearing is ended. All right, go ahead.
So the next item that I wanted to talk to you about was Executive Order number 48. So this was the governor's executive order relative to special education services. And as well in the executive order, if you look in the whereas, is he was also reemphasizing guidance that has been in place throughout the pandemic that education is an essential business and that there is the possibility in limited cohorts to be able to be providing in-person services in our school settings, particularly to students with special education. The executive order was really targeted at two specific things, is just to ensure that students who need ESY services, that we get those plans in place and we're actually able to execute those, that ESY. We continue to try and encourage our schools to be able to do that on an in-person basis because many of the students, while they are doing fine with remote instruction, many of our special education students struggle and need in-person services. It's very hard to do physical therapy, some of our occupational therapy, and some of our other ABA work in a remote world. And so we're trying to make sure that we can get with those students. And the other thing is that in the order is around trying to make sure that we have a plan for those special education students that if their education has been disrupted and they have not made progress towards their educational goals as a result of the pandemic and the shift to remote instruction and support, that we have a plan to work with the students and the families in order to try and close the deficiency towards those educational goals. The department did issue technical guidance on that yesterday, answering some of the specific questions. We put that out there and the field had some questions. You know, of course, at the executive order level, you don't have all of the details spelled out in there. So we have a technical assistance document that we put out for folks to be able to implement that guidance and hope that that will be moving forward. I'll be talking at noon today with special education directors across the state about that technical assistance and helping to make sure that that moves forward. The next thing that I wanted to just bring to your attention is I had an opportunity last week to talk to about 25 folks from the community mental health communities around the state. These are organizations that are generally supporting our students in the school environment as well as at home. And so we were just talking about strategies to in order to try and help them continue to connect with students, to be able to support the families and the students, you know, across the state, but an important resource for our families, particularly as the school year ends. We want to make sure that we don't have any kind of a disconnection that takes place and that we can continue to support folks through the summer. So I was happy to be able to meet with them and brainstorm various ideas and then bring some stuff back to our school leaders on our school leaders' calls, our calls about trying to connect up those community mental health support services with students in our schools before they exit out of the school. So actually it might have been about 2 weeks ago that I met with them. And then the last topic that I wanted to talk with you about is our ESSER grants. As you know, through the CARES Act, the state received about $37 million worth of funding for the schools. We basically set that funding up in our grant management system and opened those grants up to the schools last Wednesday they were open to the schools. We're expecting, you know, the total number of grants is about 189 grants would be applied for. My last count, I think it was as of yesterday morning, we had 3 grants had been approved. 4 were in the queue for approval, 47 had been started, which means the school had gone into the grant management system and started to apply for their funding, because obviously the funds have to be used for certain specific activities. And then we have about 135 schools that have not yet logged in to start their grant applications, but I would expect that that would happen relatively quickly, and that we will see them you know, working towards getting their grants submitted so that they can access those funds through the GMS system. And really the way that we're processing those grants is we use the grant management system or the GMS system, which is a system that all of the districts use and are familiar with. They use that for all of their title programs, so their IDEA funds. So it's a very familiar process to them as well as to the department. And so those are the things that I have to report on, and I'm happy to take any questions if there's something specific somebody wants to talk about.
Any questions?
Sounds like you've been busy. You're not in a summer relaxing time, that's for sure.
Good work.
Thank you. Thank you. Good work.
Great. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Okay. We are up to open board discussion. Anne, I believe, has something that she wanted to talk about.
The public hearings that we just opened and closed.
Yeah.
I can't hear Anne.
I wanted to know when it's appropriate for us to comment on the subject matter of the 2 public hearings that we had today.
You can comment on them anytime.
All right. Well, on public hearing 5A, which was a vocational rehabilitation program, on page 15, it's the following minimum information from each individual who is referred to the designated state unit for vocational rehabilitation services.
15, what's that page again?
15.
Thank you.
I wonder why there's no input for has this individual received prior services? Or does that violate privacy?
I don't know. Amanda happens to be here, but I don't know if you can answer that question. No.
It seems like it would be a logical place because you were inputting data about yourself, and if this is an assessment for your eligibility to receive more services, knowing if you'd had them in the past would be valuable.
I would say I think that will be answered when we see the final proposal because we are adding a lot more into it. So.
Okay. I can maybe you come closer to the
Mike, yeah. So I've been working on adding more language to the final proposal and specifically been looking at New York State, and they have a really detailed intake procedure that we've been borrowing language from. So I can't, off the top of my head, I can't remember what we added in, but maybe when we see the final proposal, if it's still not there, we can talk to Lisa Hatt about adding something in.
I'm not in a position to know if that
right.
would be useful, but it seemed like it was missing.
Okay.
Then my other question was where it states on page 33, the record of services of an individual who has achieved an employment outcome may be closed only if, as we have passed rules to apply to the maintenance of students' records, will these be digitally maintained someplace, or when it's closed, it just goes away?
That I'm not sure what their rules are for keeping records. I'm sure they have.
Good feedback.
Yes, from my phone.
Probably from your phone, yeah.
I think when we see the final proposal, we'll look at that again.
Again, it looks like it would be some valuable information to be maintained if the person needs it for the future to verify that they had this training or this employment and that the only place that detailed.
Right. So there's definitely a records section. So we will look at that and look at what the federal regulation requires for record keeping.
Thank you.
We'd have to be in compliance with that.
And one last question on page 42. I'm just curious why the state Part ED 1017, State Independent Living Services and Centers for Independent Living, why was that whole section deleted?
The funding doesn't go through the Department of Education. The funding goes through, from what we've discovered, with CHHS. But we are currently looking into that if we have to have rules for CHHS.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Thank you. Any other comments?
Yeah.
The public record, I want to give kudos to so many of the districts of the state that have worked so valiantly, and particularly those that have worked with students and parents on graduation this year. There have been so many innovative ideas, and I just think it is such respect for the class of 2020 that so many districts have tried to make this such a special experience and have truly, truly gone out of their way to celebrate their students, and I just wanted that publicly stated.
Amanda, before you go,
on
the second public hearing,
oh, yes.
On page 2, it part of the rules are it has not you're eligible to receive the robotics or make an application for the robotics fund if you've not received a grant from the robotics education development program in prior years. I found to be problematic because if you are residing in a district that has limited resources and having a robotics program is a stretch, if ever possible, mm-hmm. and that you've received the money before, but the only way you'll ever have a robotics program is if you get help. Mm-hmm. I have a real problem with that being a stipulation for your eligibility to apply.
Okay. We can look into that. That's how it's written in the statute. So that would require us talking to the legislature to get that changed.
And what section was that? I know it's robotics, but what's the second hearing, and it's a speech too.
Yes. Yes, we'll look into that.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other discussion?
Yep, Drew, it's Kate. I raised my hand.
Okay, Kate, go ahead.
One of the concerns I had, we're discussing charter schools on the annual progress report, which is great. Any way we can table that? I mean, can we talk more about it our next meeting? Because,
yeah.
You know, we talk about it now, and it's going to come back and bite us in the butt in another year or two because we haven't put, you know, accountability in, which has always been a concern. You think these people would, you know, be reliable enough, responsible enough to get everything on date, but I just don't want to keep on putting it off, and all of a sudden we're in another position. Can we
yeah,
do that?
Absolutely. I will make a note. Yeah, I can make a note, so just put that on as a discussion item for the next meeting.
Yeah. I'm going to a superintendent's meeting, too, and I'm going to bring up some of that, some of the concerns. I'm going to bring up the coming up with some different ideas. The other one was, and I did raise my hand, but I didn't get in time, was the Heartwood Public Charter School in Lancaster.
Yep.
North Country gets hit hardest. We're the first to get hardest and the last one to recover. And Lancaster especially, that's Coos County, and they really get hit hard. I had a couple questions for these people, but I kept them to myself. But I would like to see them give us an update or report in next year. But for them to come up with that money or wait for, I mean, everybody's recovering. No matter what region we're in, everybody's recovering. But I'd like an update with them, how, where they are, what they're doing. But I'd also like to give them another year if, you know, because I think this year coming, we're really fighting. We haven't even got our hotels open up yet. So I just don't see them. I think they need to go give us an update and don't open up, but give us an update, and then they need another year to see where we're all going to be. Are we going to be, you know, we're going to have to be on, you know, at home doing school, and we're getting the second wave. I just think they need to give us an update and see where they are, because it's going to be tough.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, look, I think they make clear that they really need the federal startup money. They don't have a contingency.
I know, and hopefully
for that
will approve for them. I noticed they have not touched base with the school system. They have not touched base with their superintendents. I know they wanted to say that some of them said, you know, there's a conflict. Well, not really, because they created one. So, and I know there is a building coming for them. I know that. They don't know it, but I know it. It's coming free. So, anyways, those are just some of my concerns with them. But they do need another. I don't think they realize it, but they do need another year. Up to two.
Yeah. Well, I think what we've done is we've given them a year, and I think rather than just extend it 2 years today, we'll give them that time,
yeah,
and we'll see what happens. I mean, a lot can happen in the next year, and we'll reassess.
Yeah.
Because I assume, like you do, I mean, I think we all agree that they'll probably need 2 years. So when they come back next year with an update, they'll either have some money or they'll have another request for an extension.
Yeah. Okay, I guess that's about it with me.
That's just the funding. I mean, do we have to wait for the next legislative session,
yeah,
or does it expire?
So the legislature, legislators have voted with, so I believe it's the Finance Committee, has voted repeatedly not to accept the federal charter school startup money, which means we as a department cannot accept it and dole it out. It's been granted to us. It's just waiting. And they refuse to allow it out. They refuse to allow the schools to access it. So it's in limbo. And unless they change their minds or we get a new finance committee, it'll remain in limbo.
Do we have any indication from the feds whether or not it can go be held indefinitely? Or is there a time?
Commissioner, are you still on the line listening?
I am. Did you have a question?
Do we know the federal charter school grant money that the Finance Committee has refused to accept? Do we have any word from the Fed as to how long they will allow that money to wait in limbo?
So the Feds are permitted to take that money from us at any point at this point in time. They have not signaled if they are going to do that or act on that or not at this point in time.
But they can. And I think that was the stated concern all along, was that if the legislature refuses to accept the money, the Feds have total authority to say, look, we gave it to you, we're going to take it back and give it to the state that will use it. Yeah. And that's the situation we're in. And unless the finance committee can, you know, maybe hear from schools like Hartwood that have been affected by this, I've seen no indication they're going to change their mind.
So what was the rationale the finance
committee gave
to deny it?
Commissioner? I'm not sure. I'm comfortable characterizing their rationale, but yes, it's all public record. Commissioner, can you maybe restate their rationale for not accepting it?
So first of all, I just want to be clear that it's actually the fiscal committee is the committee where they have the ability between budget cycles to be able to authorize that appropriation. And I think that their concern, it's been some time since I worked on this. I think that they were concerned that we didn't need, you know, additional charter schools, that we should just work on the charter schools that we have.
Could I speak to that also?
Sure.
I have my hand electronically raised, I promise you. I think, Anne, it's certainly a matter of public record, and you can take a look at it. I think that there was also a concern about the eventual impact on funding for traditional public education and the state's responsibility for funding once the startup funds were used. So that this is the fiscal committee, so they had a concern about the fiscal impact of acceptance of that grant. But I would urge you to read the transcripts and what the committee dealt with.
So just to clarify that one point, Helen, and I think that this will be important, there was an initial concern on the part of some members of the fiscal committee that there would be a long-term financial impact to the state. The department put out an over 16-page research report on there and pointed out that, in fact, it would be a financial benefit to the state and to school funding if we were to go forward with that. So while that was an initial concern of the fiscal committee, we were able to address that for them.
I think you did. I'm not sure there was agreement on the numbers and the result. But, you know, I don't really want to characterize it. I would just urge Anne to take a look at what's available from the public hearing.
That was Sally, by the way.
For the record, it was Sally.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry.
Okay.
All you ladies just sound alike on this phone. Sorry about that.
Oh, yeah. Like I sound like anybody in the room.
Okay. All right.
I had my hand raised about something else on public comment, on open board discussion. We are done with that. Are we?
Yeah, I think we are. Unless Sally has any other. Yep, we're done. So go ahead.
Okay. Drew, I'm going to be a broken record about volunteering to say, let's form a committee, a group. Clearly, the board is concerned about some of the components of our statutes and regulations related to charter. And we've talked about wanting to look at that and say, what do we need? And what legislative fixes or proposals can we maybe agree on and try to offer up so that we aren't in a position of not being able to enforce things that just, you know, intuitively make a lot of sense to all of us. You know, if you don't turn in your financial audits and reports, there has to be some consequences. And I'm just, again, volunteering and asking that we try to do that.
Thank you. No, I hear you, and we are. My intention is to, you know, been talking to the staff, and they've been spending a great deal of time going through this, and I'm hoping that they can get a grasp on what the big issues are before we start to staff, you know, a committee, because they've already done probably three-quarters of this work in terms of just not deciding what to do going forward, but in cataloging where most of the problems are.
Yeah.
So we're working on sort of cataloging, going through both the laws and the rules. And I think when the department has just a bit more clarity on what the biggest issues are, then happy to go ahead and start putting that task force together to take that, and the task force obviously can run in whatever direction it wants. But I think that would prevent the task force from itself spending several months going over the rules to get a grasp on what the issues are. If the staff, which has already done months worth of work on this, can have something to present. So that's kind of where we are at the moment. But it's not been, the ball's not been dropped, so you know.
Helen, are you finished, or?
I'm here. You know, I just, Drew, I certainly wouldn't want to waste anyone's time, but it feels like we've been talking about this for a long time, and we run into issues when a charter gets in trouble. We run into issues on the limitations, and I'm not looking to harm charters. I want to help them. I want them to succeed, but that is going to take, I think, some changes in our rules and regs that we already know about. We already know there are things that we need to have a better ability on. So I just don't want it, you know, I sang this song about approval programs for our post-secondary education programs. And they finally called me, and I went, and it really helped to be able to understand. And so I am, again, just I'm volunteering to be involved if that would be helpful.
Absolutely, and I think you and I pretty much agree on what the big issues are, and that
yep.
if we can come up with better rules, we're going to help these charter schools.
Yep.
The ones in existence and new ones that come up. So, I mean, I don't think there's really a lot of disagreement here. I think it's just a matter of I don't want to waste any task force or commission's time duplicating the work the department's already almost finished doing. So that's kind of the delay here. It's just hoping the department can you know, tidy up the work it's mostly done with, and then we can have something to work on. Yeah, Cindy?
One other question. I was asked last week at our local board meeting, and I started wondering, what is the status of the social study setting the new standards and everything?
Yeah. That's
a social study. Somebody said, isn't that, I said, it's a work in progress.
It's a work in, yeah, no, that's a great question. I'm glad you asked it. So it's been on hold a little bit because of the COVID situation and the department having to drop pretty much everything to deal with all that stuff and us not being able to meet. So it's near the end of the process.
Is there like almost a draft?
Yes, yes. So, and I haven't, I'm not sure I have the latest, but my understanding is the draft is nearing completion, but I think, and don't, this isn't 100% sure, I think there had to be kind of there was a bit of a break on the work on it because of the COVID situation. So, it's been put on hold briefly, but it has moved forward. I know there's still revisions. There's still work going on the draft. We don't have a complete draft yet, but hope to get one pretty soon.
There was like parallel committees. You said a long time ago there were two parallel committees working almost. And that's just the coalition.
Well, not really. There's the big standards review, which is not as big as we wanted it to be. We sent out invitations to, I don't even know the number, a vast number of people, and we didn't get nearly as much participation as we wanted. But it's still the large committee that's actually reviewing the standards. And then there was a separate social studies review panel that's looking at the actual implementation of what's going on, and that we haven't. I have been involved in that one, and we haven't met in months because there's no ability to meet, and it was difficult. But the last, just so you know where that one left off, the last meeting we had, we are working on a draft of a survey that the department is going to work with us to get out to social studies teachers. So what we're trying to do is learn more about how instruction is actually working on the ground. So we have the standards view, which is taking this high-level, state-level standards approach. But we're trying to look at what are the actual practices, what are kids learning, what are the deficiencies, are there, we got a big list of questions.
Yeah,
we're going to be
sure.
looking at stuff like how many teachers are, like, so for example, social studies is now broken down, especially at the mid-level. It can be incorporated into lots of different classes. So we're seeing, partly as a result of Common Core and the way that was structured, English language arts, for example, is seeing a big increase in nonfiction text. And what some schools, we've done this is anecdotal that we're hearing from teachers, so we're trying to do a survey to find out how this is actually working across the state. Are we seeing a lot more social studies content being taught by English teachers who maybe don't have the certification in social studies, and maybe there's a short trip there that kids are getting. We don't know the answer to that, which is why we're going to be asking. So there are questions like that that we're working on a survey, and that had to be put on hold because everything kind of came to a halt in February. But we hope to get that started back up fairly soon and maybe get that survey out at the beginning of the next school year. So that, by the way, that little panel has had to meet intermittently over the years. We had hoped to be done by well before this summer, and that's not going to happen. So it's just a delay, unfortunately. But I think we're going to get some pretty interesting feedback to get a much clearer picture of what the strengths and weaknesses are in the way we teach social studies in New Hampshire, and where we might focus our resources to improve it, both content-wise and instructor. You go just go down the list. There's a lot that leads the social studies folks that are engaged in this panel believe can be improved. So, but we're testing our theories. This is one thing that everybody, which is great. Like everybody in this panel came into it with some preconceived notions of what they thought was wrong based on their own experiences, and we agreed through our discussion that well, we really need to have more input, and that's why we're doing the survey. We're going to try to test our presumptions.
So will the survey occur before the draft is written?
No, this is not running in tandem with the standards.
Okay.
So so the standards are going to be
separate thing, and the survey is how it should be implemented.
And the review panel is looking more at how does it work in practice? How are kids actually learning? How is it being taught? Is it being taught by properly certified instructors? Or how much training do the instructors have? That kind of thing. So we're kind of looking at, on the ground, the actual interaction between teacher and student and how that works for social studies. And then that's separate than the standards. So,
thank you.
Yeah, but there, unfortunately, things have dragged out a lot longer than we anticipated.
Just like all the weddings. The world is postponed according to COVID. It's just kind of run off a lot of things.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Okay. Any other discussion? All right. So we have a truck.
Close the window a little bit.
Yeah,
I'll
be
thrilled. I was
going to
say, Helen, you're happy here. They have all the windows open. I'm freezing to death.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So we have received our conditional approval response on school building construction, and we got an okay. So we're good to move with adopt. So this is going back in the agenda to item 4C, adopt school building construction, ED 321.
Like a motion?
Yes.
I make a motion to move the State Board of Education to adopt ED 321 school building construction.
Second from Sally. Roll call.
Sally Griffin?
Yes.
Ann Lane?
Yes.
Kate Cassidy?
Yes.
Cindy Shagman?
Yes.
Bill Nazaro?
Yes.
Helen Honoro?
Yes.
Drew Klein?
Abstain.
Thank you.
All right. So let's move to the consent agenda. Meeting minutes and revised tuition agreement between Pinkerton Academy and Chester School District. Did anybody have any questions or concerns about either of those?
I would have to abstain from the meeting minutes since it's not online, and but so I can you can do both of them. I'll just totally abstain. It has nothing to do with the tuition agreement.
Okay. Did anybody catch anything in the meeting minutes? Any changes to that? Okay. I would entertain a motion.
I make a move to approve as a slate the consent agenda, A, meeting minutes May 14, 2020, and B, revised tuition agreement between Pinkerton Academy and Chester School District.
That was Ann making the motion. Sally second. Roll call.
Sally Griffin?
Yes.
Ann Lane?
Yes.
Kate Cassidy?
Yes.
Cindy Shagnon?
Thanks.
Phil Nazaro?
Yes.
Helen Honoro?
Yes.
Drew Klein?
Abstain.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. So at this point, we have a non-public session. So I would entertain a motion to, no, not yet, to enter non-public sessions under RSA 91A:3-2C, matters which, if discussed in public, would likely affect adversely the reputation of any person other than a member of this board, unless such person requests an open meeting.
So moved. Second.
Second from Cindy. Roll call.
Sally Griffin, yes. Ann Lane, yes.
Let's see. Make sure Angela's on the line. Angela, are you there?
Yes, I am. I am. It's Sally Griffin?
Yep.
Yes.
Ann Lane?
Yes.
Kate Cassidy?
Yes.
Cindy Shagnon?
Yes.
Phil Nazaro?
Yes.
Helen Honoro?
Yes.
Drew Klein.
Okay. Okay, so Jen, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
So we're
yes,
we
I
just
am.
Put it in non-public. I need to make sure that you are able to physically do that on the call so that no one who called in to listen can listen.
Yes, the way it's going to happen is I'm going to end this recording. I'm going to exit the call, and then I will call back in as the host, and I will only allow the speakers in.
Okay, so we will now wait for you to do that.
All right, stand by. I'll be right back.
Yeah, go ahead. Why don't we all going to take five.
I'll see you back in 5 minutes.
Okay, all right.